You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio, and I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin. This is Man v. Mob Radio, and let me put my guests on, see if their mics work. My guests tonight are Vlad and Bill, so can the two of you hear yourselves on the mics? That's the question.
Should I hear myself?
You should be able to hear yourself on the mics.
Turn it on.
Yeah, this is a constant issue.
You should also be able to hear me, right? Test.
Try it again. Why don't you try the one in the middle? That one over there.
Wait. Test.
Yep, that one works.
This one works. Okay.
That one works. So, number three. Sorry, people. Sorry this always happens on the air, but you... I don't know, you can't really test yourself beforehand. And mic four, let's try that again. Try it again.
Does it work?
Yep.
I think it does.
Yeah, I think that works.
I hear you.
We're good. Okay, cool. So, once again, if you're just tuning in, the usual technical difficulties proceeded. but this is Man v. Mob Radio, and I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin, and my guests tonight are Vlad and Bill. We've known each other for about 6 months, 7 months now, and they're the hosts of the Financially Independent podcast, and they were gracious enough to have me on their podcast about 6 months ago when I had first resigned from my job and was figuring my life out. And we just did, before this... This is kind of unprecedented. We did an episode of the Man v. Mob podcast, a crossover of Man v. Mob and Financially Independent podcast. And unfortunately, we weren't allowed to record it where we had originally wanted to downstairs. So we had to do it outside, and you two were good sports. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having us.
It was refreshing.
It was good.
Yeah, you did a great job. And we, I think, had a pretty good podcast, and it was basically going over the last 6 months of how far our respective podcasts have come, and a lot can happen in 6 months.
Yeah, it's the last time we met, I guess, 6 months ago.
When did we do it? June?
Yeah, June.
I think
so.
June.
The episode that I was on, we talked about the gig economy, but and you know, I'm sorry if a little bit of this episode rehashes some of the things that we just talked about in the podcast, but basically, you were saying that. Or I was saying at the beginning that I was impressed by your podcast because although your topic is generally making financial information more accessible to people, you also don't shy away from going into other territories. And you had a physicist on. You were saying that you had a great conversation with him.
Very, very great experience. We had we called it a physics special, I guess, because our podcast is mostly about finance. So it's a special. We don't usually talk to physicists, but we had a very good connection. A good contact with our friend Jörg, who is a PhD physicist, neuroscientist from Germany, and we decided, why not ask him some questions that you usually ask yourself when you're, you know, like drinking with friends or I don't know, doing whatever you like to do when you're with friends. But you know, usually have these conversations like, oh, imagine this or multiverse or stuff like this. But we're always speaking in Lyman terms, you know, like,
oh, yeah.
Nobody can really explain you. It's like, dude, imagine if this is a multiverse and then maybe you live in another one. But like when you talk to a real physicist, he's like, oh, actually, this is a theory based on different stuff, which...
He didn't just sound like a kooky sort of back to the future doctor.
No, it was really scientifically.
He sounded
bad.
Very German, though.
It was, yeah.
You know,
that's when you know
people.
That you're dealing with the real thing, when they sound a little German, at least.
BMW.
So that's great, because I really like how the time and place that we are right now is making everything more accessible, more collaborative, and this unprecedented pace of change that we're dealing with, shifting from the 20th century and its way of viewing the world and its different mental models to the 21st century and you know, the technical innovations and the moral aspect of what those innovations are going to bring. All those conversations are happening, and they can sort of be open source, public, and people can engage with them at will and gain a sense of stability from these conversations when everything seems like it's up in the air, you know? So I think it's cool that you two are contributing in such a good way to that.
It's cool. I guess it's great what you're doing as well on the radio and the podcast as well. I guess it's good for everybody. I mean, if you just are able to have open conversations with people, there's nothing really bad that can happen from it, as long as it's fruitful conversation. You know?
Yeah, keep the lines of communication open.
I think this shared economy will spread over everything. We have transformed it for cars. We have the internet. The internet is also a huge database of knowledge about everything, actually. And when I think of it sometimes, basically how I learned coding is you go on the internet and there are so many tutorials. GitHub is also doing a fair share. You have all these free repositories with code on there. And so you can, let's also consider the public library in Boston. You can basically study for free. The only problem you have then, you'd have no proper certificate of it. That's the thing. But you can theoretically study for free. If you're organized enough, or if you ask somebody, what do I need to study this? You can theoretically study completely for free. But you unfortunately have no proof to show other people. That's the thing.
Do you think that's going to be one of the big issues of our day, is the lack of credentialism that exists? Because I sort of think we're coming out of an era where there was so much credentialism and so much meaningless credentialism, where people were saying, oh, I have this piece of paper that says I'm a thing, and they often weren't very skilled in that thing that the piece of paper said that they were skilled at. So I'm hoping that obviously the internet with its endless information allows people, like you're saying, to educate themselves in all different ways, right? But now we've kind of hit the other side where you have a lack of credentials, so you don't really know. And there are a lot of people who didn't grow up with the internet who it's hard to assess information on your own and know who is totally full of it and who has who has more research or more experience in a given field, I would say.
I think we're also on top of that, moving away from just blindly believing certificates and just blindly saying, okay, this guy has an A in math, must be good.
Yeah.
We're going to hire him, and more towards doing assignments. Even when we hired for our startup, when I hired at my old workplace, we were always giving people samples of what they are supposed to do at work. So you have the best overview, the best sample of what they are good at, what they're not good at, how they work, how's their style, how do they comment, all these small things between the lines. You can normally not find out if you just have a piece of paper that says is good or is mediocre, is bad.
I think that especially applies here in the States if you're employing somebody that comes from international background. So it's like if you're American and you're employing somebody who comes, let's say, I don't know, from India or from Montenegro or from Germany, you might not know your local university from your island, you know. So it's a universal, like if you give somebody the assignment you're supposed to do for this job, they can do it or they cannot do it.
Yeah.
Like I don't care where you're from Harvard or you don't do it, you're not hired, you know.
If you can do it and you can do it well and you can prove it. So are you saying that you personally you care less about the credentials than whether somebody can get the job done?
Yeah, but I think they're kind of correlated. Even though like we're moving away from credentials and everything, I think there is a good correlation between credentials and people being able to do something. Still.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty tight correlation there. I guess the biggest credential that I can think of and where the most anger exists right now is obviously, I mean, what's the most obvious credential for most of us is the college degree, right? A lot of people feel like they get this inflated document that they say, I was promised that this was going to be worth something. And it's just like an inflated currency where people, they invested personally in something that didn't have value
because
to it.
It's a bubble.
A lot of people who aren't necessarily, what's the term? Don't thrive in intellectual environments, but could very well thrive in other environments, are pushed into it and pushed into the debt of it. And that's, I mean, I'm not trying to get off on a whole thing with education here, but purely the credential aspect of it where, there's like an inherent, I think, distrust of a spreading distrust of credentials because of the realization that this major credential for a lot of people was meaningless.
I personally think that's a direct result of the fact that we're living in an era where we have such a lot of student debt outstanding, in the United States. And if you think about it, all the debt that was issued as student loans, all of that debt was invested somewhere, and it was invested in education, and all that money went to schools.
Yeah.
And if you think also about schools, schools are businesses. So schools, what the business does is try to expand. You open new wardens. I don't know. You open new schools. Mm-hmm. Let's say our Hull International Business School opens another campus. You know, like, or you open another area of study. Now we're teaching not only finance. We'll be teaching this. And I think you lose some of the quality if you are just trying kind of to expand very quickly and to accommodate new directions in university. You know?
I think part of the problem is also that people noticed as soon as you throw money at certain universities, they will give you a nice degree and it will look good, and people will get jobs with such degrees, but you are not probably skilled for it. So
yeah.
When people,
it's kind of what I realized.
Yeah, when people senselessly throw money at stuff and it's not worth the money, then the universities on their part will just hike prices until it's inflated, and then everybody has to pay $60,000, a big car, for a master.
And do you think that with universities, they're, so you know how we've reached the realization that Facebook's product isn't their service, their product is us. Like, a lot of people started to put that together with it, meaning like our data is the product. Like, we're brought to Facebook and then our data can be sold. Do you think the same thing is happening at the universities in general, where we've lost track of what the product was and originally conceivably the product, and it still mostly is, but there's been a corruption, so to speak, where like originally the product was purely a valuable education and enabling somebody to think, creating a critical mind and such. But then other things over time got added on top of this big stack of, okay, well, is our product our research? Is our product our education to students? Is our product our sports teams? And then, like, when you have everything, the original product of the education gets lost in the shuffle, I think. But maybe that's just...
I would say that students have become some part of the value chain. Because when, for example, you start getting a lot of mails as soon as you sign up for a TOEFL test, or what is the other one? IELTS test, the English tests, or for GMAT. Then because universities buy the data these agencies are collecting when you sign up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start recruiting you, sending you mails. Hey, we have a next information session about this master. Sign up. It's the seats are filling up fast. So this is, for example, how the first value chain is passed over. From you sign up for a test, which is, in my opinion, also to some extent just a cash grab. Because IELTS test is valid for 2 years. And after 2 years, I suddenly forget everything.
Yeah.
So it's to me a bit weird.
So it's almost like a built-in fee structure.
Yeah. So it's like... You have, I would say, approximately spend $1,000, €1,000 around that time, around that amount, to just hand in applications, because you need to hand in GMAT and then you need to hand in IELTS and $100 application fee and everything. So there is already some, what you would consider, paywall.
Yeah.
You call it paywall in games and in some things. So there is a paywall just for the first value chain, and then with the next value chain, when you are at the university, you... are again for the next value chain, and they are also trying to sell you stuff that might not be in this moment maybe worthless, and you have to make some sort of it. So I get the aspect that when you are there, you have to make your studies count, and you have to study, and you have to do your stuff, and you have to look beyond, and you have to go above and beyond, and you have to make your money worth something. But I would say that sometimes, especially as education, sometimes a bit too much business and too less education.
Yeah.
In general, I would say.
I mean, but we studied at a business school.
I know, but the thing is, just the word business school doesn't justify that you can suddenly teach less, or that you can teach less quality, or then you can just try to hook up people and hope that they will throw money at everything senselessly without actually...
I'm just saying that I don't think me and you have a proper U.S. university experience, because we'd never studied in the U.S. Halt is not the U.S. university.
Yeah, I know.
I would say that. So maybe if we went to a different school, I would say yes. But
university adjacent, similar, but you're saying not
yeah,
quite
I think
the
like
full.
Studying at Tufts or studying in our school is completely different. Like, it's a very big university, and you have also like a campus and everything, and you know, like the whole American college kind of thing, where in our
Yeah, maybe I should another master just to experience it.
We had three Americans in our whole thing, right? So the experience is, I would say, would be very different.
Yeah.
I think from university's perspective, I would say that their product is the workforce that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, if you're in university and you produce a workforce, let's say people that come out, that they're not doing a good job, it's going to come back and bite you, you know where. So it's kind of a circle. It really, you know, when you leave university, if you don't really, if let's say the big percentage of your students doesn't have success, well, that's going to speak for university, kind of. So I think that they have a vested interest in producing good quality students. And of course, some of the universities like Harvard, you're probably going to have one person at Harvard who doesn't know what they're talking about, but the degree is still going to work for them. But I would say on a large sample of people, they would still be way above average.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I could see it that way, but a part of me also thinks it's almost like you've heard of the term. It looks like I'm getting a phone flash. So let me see if. Oh no, it's gone. It sort of seems like. Have you ever heard of the term externality before? You know, like or maybe tragedy of the commons, where so businesses who pollute, for example, like they don't really have. They're not held accountable, and they pollute to like a shared, the environment is a shared thing, right? So like the tragedy of the commons comes from, like, imagine a big open field where all of the farmers can have their cattle graze. None of them owns the field. And therefore they, like, the field gets overgrazed and everybody suffers as a result. So that's where, that an externality is like an unintended consequence that everybody shares. So maybe that concept of externality is also happening with universities, where they're outputting people who aren't going to be successful in what they're trying to get a degree for, but it's sort of like we push them through. I'm not saying that somebody's actively thinking this cynically and saying let's screw them or whatever, but I'm saying that maybe there's less of an incentive because it's like, oh well, there's always going to be a pool of people we can draw from. It doesn't really matter on the other end because they're through, like, we already got their checks.
So you know what, I think actually I would say that I agree with what you're saying. And I think it might happen in a different way. It might happen in a way where me and Bill want to start a business, and me and Bill want to start the business school.
Yeah,
it's our business, and we're going to start it because there are always going to be students. They're going to pay us, and we can just shove them through.
Right on.
I don't know if we can give them some kind of a visa in the States or something like this, and we can just use them as a cash cow, and they can have a degree in the end. I think there are a lot of new places that didn't exist before, which now see so many students.
Yeah,
everybody is a student all of a sudden because everybody can get a loan and stuff like this, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that there are new places opening and kind of maybe murking the waters, because you have these universities, they're not very good, but they produce people who have degrees, don't really know anything. I still think that the top institutions are producing quite educated people.
I do too. Because more eyes are on them, right? Like, it's hard to perform as terribly when you have so many eyes on you and what you're producing.
It's like the bandwagon effect. You also joined the train right now. It's going. The profit is there to be made. Let's also quickly open up something.
Yeah.
Sell some degrees.
Yeah. Exactly.
Make some money.
But it's like in an industry, you know. Like,
yeah, I know.
I don't know if you were selling shoes and then all of a sudden, I don't know, Martians appear, they want to buy shoes, and you're like, oh, hey, let's sell fake shoes, then we'll wear shoes or something. It's a bad example, but like, it happens.
No, I understand what you're saying.
All the industries. So I think that might be the effect, you know.
I know what you mean.
People who are not supposed to be there are now opening schools.
Yeah,
maybe let's say it like this.
That's true. Kind of on the bottom end too, where it's like, it's, yeah, top institutions it's tougher, but there's a lot of sort of charlatans and people who are making cash grabs and people who are conning that accumulate at the bottom.
A lot of schools.
Yeah. So in the interest of keeping the lines of communication open, I didn't bring this up earlier in the radio program, but so we have a studio line, and I would love for anybody who is listening and interested in our conversation to call in and talk with us. It's me, your host, Patrick, and looks like we have a flash right now, so let me try to answer that call. call. Is it still there? And no, it's gone again. Okay, so anyway, the number that you should call, our studio line, is 855-915-9636. Once again, that's 855-915-9636. If you can't remember the last four digits, that's the studio name WMFO in digit form. So, oh, okay, the phone flasher is back on. I'm going to give this a try. So, hey, caller, can you hear me? Hello? All right, well, that was an attempt to answer the call, but no one was there.
Yeah, cool.
So there's a, for those of you who have never seen the inside of the studio before, there's a little strobe light off to my left-hand side, which is kind of in my peripheral. You would think a strobe would be very easy to spot, but when it's in your peripheral vision, it's not so easy. So if I missed your call, I'm sorry, but it's possible that that I didn't see it. But anyway, I will give you that number one more time, 855-915-9636. You're listening to Man v. Mob Radio. I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin. And so, Vlad, Bill, what do you think about the how the internet in the time that we're growing up in right now, or I mean, we're grown up, but basically the time that we occupy right now is so full of information, you know, the age of information, so to speak. It's like the fire hose has been turned on, where we're so inundated with information, and that it used to be that institutions really controlled the flow of information, whether it was like the church or a government or some other institution, the media, right? There's so much information right now that do you think that's kind of, from my point of view, it's sort of collapsed people's abilities to interpret that information. It's such a deluge, and to like really understand what's going on at all a lot of the time. Like, what do you think? I know I'm sort of springing this question on you, but like, what do you think the effect of that is going to be? Do you think we're going to get better at it? Do you think we're going to have to sort of just learn to interpret which information is noise, or how are we going to do that? Do you have any ideas that?
I personally think that we already, in the last 10 years, we already kind of are getting better at it. You can tell if some ad is fake and just wants your attention. How do you call it? Clickbait. You kind of know. And I think a lot of people are not kind of, when was the last time you posted a Facebook update? You know, really some like a status update. So I think Facebook has suffered a little bit from this. But I think in general that we are kind of learning, okay, we're seeing an impact on the kids. Maybe kids shouldn't be exposed to social media, but it takes time, because like this, 2004, right? Facebook came out, 2006.
No, 2004?
Yeah,
so yeah, but around that time.
It's been like 15 years, and I think we're learning, coping with it, but I think it's also a very good time to be alive if you want to waste your time. Because like you can always go into YouTube videos or like, and you kind of have to learn how to cope and control yourself, you know, like, okay, I'm not going to look at my phone. Okay, I'm going to listen to an audiobook. The fact that you said there's so much information out there, it means that you can choose now to listen to an audiobook.
Yeah.
You can listen to a podcast. You can do whatever you imagine, you can get it on the internet. And if you're always stuck in these Instagram and YouTube video schemes, you're just going to get your kind of a dopamine hit from it. And you're gonna lose a lot of time, but you have to learn it yourself. I guess nobody is responsible for you wasting your time, I guess.
Yeah, that can be a hell of a lot of a responsibility, or a lot of responsibility for somebody to handle.
And I think especially if you're a young kid, that can be a problem, because I mean, until I was 22 or something, I couldn't really basically not control my thoughts, but like I didn't have so much control of I didn't notice that I was getting lost into something, right? I wouldn't. And now I do it much quicker, but I think if you're let's say 12 11,
yeah,
and you have an iPhone, and then I think you could just get lost. I think you get
it's pretty darn easy, the temptation, and not to mention the lack of generational familiarity with the technology from above. Means that, like, you know, typically things that parents or older generations would help their kids through that are sort of timeless, you know, like puberty, for example, like major confusions and things that there would be a lot of built up wisdom over is just entirely lacking with right now the older generations. I'm not saying that as that was a broad generalization. Of course, there are plenty of people who really understand the technology and engage with it, but there are a lot of people who are just really struggling to understand the chaos of this and can't really provide a framework on which the younger people who lack the ability to self-regulate, there's no framework for them being handed down from above. So it's really sort of like a you're on your own situation. Yeah. Raise yourself.
But I wouldn't say that we're the only generation that's going through this.
Oh, don't worry about
it. My bad.
I recognize that ringtone. I heard that so many times when I was traveling.
Yeah, let me quickly take over. Sure. What I thought about. So we are one of the last generations. My generation, I was born in 1991.
So you're that fully
actually
millennial.
Grew. Yeah, that actually grew up.
You're well within.
With a time frame, with a duration where we had no internet access at all.
Yeah.
And I actually think that the ability to have completely white noise and have nothing, and you have to be creative and to create, play, to create it.
Yes.
Even when you're 5, 6, 7 years old, I think it's important to a certain extent. Also, I do not really like, what I appreciated during my bachelor, we needed to take handwritten notes. We're not allowed to use laptops. I think handwriting and writing down stuff, summarizing things, there's the saying, what went through your pencil also went through your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is also important. That might, I would just guess now, like a bit more. My brother, for example, barely does any handwriting things. I don't know if this is good in the long run, because it's more of a planetary experiment here. We don't know how this turns out. Generations that are younger than I am, maybe just 2, 3, 4 years old, are already asking Google as if it's something completely normal. Hey, Google, what is this? And I'm thinking, just type it in. It's okay. Or maybe you just know it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the vast majority of information available to us just makes us lazy to learn things, because we think in the background we have it available, so I don't need to know it anymore.
Yeah.
And but I also think that knowing stuff and connecting stuff to each other also contributes to your perception, to your thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So in the long run, I can't say if this is a good thing or a bad thing. Maybe just the way we have access to information changes entirely.
Yeah.
And we are used to that you don't need to know everything.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm also thinking that having a good amount in your head and having the brain thinking about the stuff in your head is maybe better than just asking when you type in what is $40,000 per year per month.
Yeah.
Maybe people should know and use the calculator and type 40,000 divided by 12 instead of typing it into Google. So
that's true. Yeah. I'm glad that you said that at the end, actually, because I was just about to ask, do you think this is a new version of what was happening during the transition to the calculator, where people were saying, hold on a second, so now you're saying all this stuff that I had to remember, all this arithmetic and all these functions and everything, now some kid gets to just have that all in this magical box and they don't have to remember any of it, and isn't that going to be dangerous? And it's funny that you said that at the end, because now we take it for granted that you're saying, because you come from a generation probably after that train of thought, that's like, can't these people just type it into a calculator? It's funny, because the calculator is your default, whereas like, that's interesting.
Yeah, me in fifth grade, now we have a calculator, now math is going to be easy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just...
Sometimes I even calculate stuff in my head, just intentionally. If I have time, if I'm not at the cashier, I sometimes try to do percentages, plus, minus, divided by, in my head, when I have time, just to train my brain, just to not get rusty in this field.
Yeah, I get sloppy and completely lose track. Yeah, and that's another example of people having to be accountable to themselves. And let's face it, a lot of people aren't very good at that. And
it makes it easy to procrastinate. I think the internet made it unbelievably easy to procrastinate YouTube. Just watch YouTube at 3 a.m. Oops, I didn't study for my exam. Let's do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's. I think YouTube made it super easy to procrastinate. Instagram as well. So, yeah.
But so I've thought about this too, where everything that we do has technology embedded in it now. So the nature of these devices, whether it's our tablets or our laptops or our iPhones or whatever, they are these black boxes, and you can't tell what people are doing on them. So there's a tendency to assume that the person is doing, you know, like if it was your kid who was using a phone, you'd be like, oh, they're obviously just doing TikTok and playing the helicopter game or Flappy Bird or Angry Birds or whatever. I'm obviously way behind on phone games and stuff like that. But the point is like, oh, they're not doing anything particularly constructive. They're just wasting time and not being creative. But maybe they are creating some sort of online community. Maybe they're building something. Maybe they're designing something. Maybe they're learning about how drones work or like the young person's world, whether we like it or not, exists more in a digital space now where we lament the fact that we don't see kids like Tom Sawyer walking down the street, putting a fence along the, or putting a stick along the fence or sword fighting with sticks or poking frogs or whatever. And I still think kids do that, but we see less of it because there's this whole digital world to engage with now.
I agree with you completely. Like, why would you raise somebody to focus on writing, let's say, I'm just using this as an example, with pen, pencil, or whatever, if they're going to grow up in the digital world and they're not going to be competitive in terms of, because maybe there's nothing to do with the pen and pencil in that world, you know, like, and you kind of have to, I guess this is the fault of every generation, that we kind of, in our time, you know, like, you listen to... You listen to your grandparents, your parents, and everybody's like, in our time we did it like this. Yeah. It's like, I think it's just that fact when we use this word in our time was better or something. It's just the fact that we are not capable as people to really cope with the passing of time.
Yeah.
Or change that quickly, especially living in the 20th century and 21st century.
Yeah.
When the change is very rapid. And I catch myself also at the same time I catch myself thinking that way as well, but because I feel something like, this is wrong. Like, augmented reality, this is wrong. Like, you shouldn't be spending that much time. But then I remember my parents telling me when I was a kid, you shouldn't be playing games so much. But now everybody plays games.
Yeah.
Nobody's I'm dying because of games, you know, like, so I think that we just have to kind of remind ourselves that things are changing, and even if you don't like that your kid is now playing games, well, he might make $20 million per year just making videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
This is a new industry that didn't exist 15 years ago. How would you prepare your kid for this besides using a phone?
You can't. I mean, it's almost like a laboratory generation. Like Gen Z right now, the ones that grew up entirely, also known as iGen, I believe, who grew up entirely within the time of internet existing. They're sort of an experimental generation in the sense of we don't know what the effects of all these things are going to be.
I think that it's just a change. Now new skills are required and now new skills are being trained by kids. The play has changed, but I also think that physical play for kids is good. Like, just give them regular toys, just give them a stick and let them, beat the fence.
I think a
well-rounded training of everything, of physical stuff, of digital stuff, is as important as also teaching them that you don't have the internet during an exam, because we still have this format that you cannot write exams and you have the internet open. Some are open book, but the majority is still regular, have it in your head, because we still stick to this. And I think that the awareness that certain stuff needs to be learned and cannot be, so to say, the internet is like a huge cloud, and for some things we just stick to the dogma. And I think it's good that the cloud is not always available. Have some stuff in your head and have some stuff on your own hard drive, so to say.
Yes, yeah, that's a really good analogy. Yeah. I think that we tend to forget that social media, technology, the internet, all of these things are part of our substantially, vastly expanded toolbox, right? And we forget that these things are tools, and we tend to blame things rather than people and how people use things. So all of these things are capable of, when wielded properly, immense greatness, but also chaos and terrible things. So, I'm concerned, for example, that kids who lack the knowledge of restraint when it comes to using some of this technology can start to use it as a crutch, where it used to be free time, where you had to think of what to do. You know, it was sort of a wellspring of creativity, you had to come up with things based on a lack of resources. Now, if you can just immediately go into something like Flappy Bird, then you don't have to be creative. You don't have to engage in that way.
Sorry for interrupting. Can I make one point? Because
sure.
I'm probably going to forget if I make it. If you think about it, okay, let's say, I think the one good thing that might come out of it, let's say you're playing Flappy Bird or whatever, mm-hmm. if you're immersed in the device, right?
Yeah.
This is the device of the future. You're using the device, right?
Yeah.
And I think just by using the device and knowing the device, let's say an example, 90% of the people who are not as coders are gamers.
Yeah.
Why would they all used to be gamers? Because when you spend hours and hours playing a game on your computer, you get pretty familiar with your computer.
Sure.
And you get interested in the language of the computers, and then you're not weirded out by spending 5-6 hours doing something on your computer.
Yeah.
And you become good. Oh, I'm good at coding now. You know?
I think that's the making the mistake of looking in wonder. So, you know, when you go on, I don't know if you're a hiker or if you like, when you go on a path down down the woods and you are looking in one direction, you go, oh, there's only one path, so there's no possibility that I could get lost. And you never turn around and realize that there are infinite forks coming from the other direction. So it seems like there's a little bit of a fallacy with what you're saying, in that, yes, pretty much everybody who gets into coding started off playing video games, but how many people that play video games get into coding? Is it like 5%?
Yeah,
great finger dexterity.
Yeah, I'm not saying if you're playing games you're a coder immediately.
Oh no,
I'm
I
just
know
saying
that.
I'm just speaking averages, and I would say that the big number of people who went into video games are not coders.
Yes, I actually agree with you.
Yeah.
It was just basically pointing out to people to not get confused and be like, oh, you know, like automatically, if you have familiarity with video games, then like that's going to lead to greatness.
I didn't mean this.
I gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, I think, Bill, what you were saying before, where millennials occupy this strange position where, you know, I'm not trying to say like, oh, we're special and great, and I'm just saying it's kind of a unique point in history where we grew up with our foot in the pre-internet age and our other foot in the age of internet. And it's like, maybe that imbues us with a specific responsibility for helping the younger generation establish a sense of identity and helping the older generations establish a sense of familiarity with technology and a sense of having more comfort with this pace of change that's happening. You know, because it's like we grew up having an identity that was not fully formed, but largely formed pre-internet. So, you know, we had play and figuring ourselves out and whatnot. And then we shifted into the internet era where we still were, our brains were still elastic and developing when a lot of these new digital skills were becoming relevant. So we sort of have a bit of a hybrid mind in the way that I see it.
Maybe not. I would say so. I think at the end of the day, I would really also say it's more of a hybrid thing, because I used to jump around in the puddles as a 6-year-old, but at the same time, when I got my first Nintendo in 1998, then I started playing video games here and there. And when my best friend's mother said, please go out and play something outside, then we were taking the Nintendo and the PlayStation 1 outside and set it up outside. So at the end, they were playing something outside. So I think the responsibility is not letting the channels become too easy, and not having the channels replacing your own learning.
Yeah.
Because if you're not learning at all, if you're only... Let's say you don't know anything, you're 18 years old, but you don't know anything, you are always used to looking up the corresponding Wikipedia article, or you're always used to look up what else do we have, Wikipedia or some translation websites. So then
sure.
you don't have anything at hand. I think that's also not good for your brain, because when your brain doesn't even have to think about anything, you're just reading something out.
Yeah.
But okay, no, we're back at reading, because when you read, you also have to get used to what are the letters, how do you pronounce the letters, and then how do you read. So I think the brain is an apparatus that naturally strives towards learning and understanding relations between everything.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard to not learn at all for the brain.
Mm-hmm.
But when the channels are becoming so easy to replace learning, then you might learn the wrong things at the end of the day, I might think. So if you're maybe continuing just to play Angry Birds all day, then you are the championship, then you win the world championship in Angry Birds, but you don't know what 5x5 is because you have to look it up like this. So maybe this is a long-term thing, but then you always have... Then it might just invert when I extrapolate it like very, very far into the future, because when the next generation and the next two or three or four generations, for them, internet is normal, digitalization is normal, PCs are normal, everybody can code and everybody can speak five coding languages. Mm-hmm. Then out of a sudden, it has inverted. Now the other end, masonry, carpentry, building houses from scratch, because we have developed construction robots and demolition robots, is now. And when you want to have your individualized stuff, then the new luxury thing is having a real human carpenter and a real human mason building your house. So I think this will always... I think this could invert.
That's very interesting that you mention inversions like that. I think that we're going to see quite a few of those. It's almost like when societies become ultra decadent, they start to do things that are like, for example, camping. You look at something like, okay, living outdoors in a little piece of fabric, that's not exactly the epitome of luxury. But once you get to a certain point in your life where you have a lot of resources, then you go, I think I'm going to go camping or glamping or whatever, right? It's the same thing where it's like starvation, not exactly fun, but what happens when you get to the peak of having resources, you go, I'm going to go on a starvation diet and choose like a couple things that I want to eat.
Actually funny the BMI thing, like how this inverted in some cultures, being chubby is nice, or being really fat is considered nice because it expresses wealth,
opulence,
prosperity,
right?
Or in Western culture, because we have such high nutrient density for everything, we can buy everything at hand.
Yeah.
Having the discipline to be skinny or to be ripped when you go to the gym regularly is about an expression of prosperity, of wealth, or of self-discipline,
In having like, you know, an 8-pack in pecs, and I'm obviously talking male physique here, but like having that sort of like Schwarzenegger physique, well, maybe not Schwarzenegger, but having like a strong male physique.
The physique.
you used to be sort of a sign that you were a laborer, right? You were a worker. And now it's interesting because the aesthetic, the laborer aesthetic, I'm using air quotes right now, is like the aspiration of people who might be like white collar workers and who engage in their desk job. There are lots of interesting inversions. So I think that what was the point that I was going to make? I hate forgetting my point. I guess it was really just about you were talking before about how we have You're essentially, in a way, is what I interpreted as saying that we sort of deceive ourselves into thinking that we're much smarter than we actually are now, because we grew up with the luxury of having an infinite realm of information at our fingertips. And so, you know, having a smartphone or something like that, this is why older generations look at the younger generations like they're extremely arrogant, is because a lot of us are very arrogant now, because we act like this realm of information that has been amassed and made available to us is our own information and acquired through our own, slow acquiring of the information, rather than the fact that it's merely in the device in our hand. So, you know, we can be kind of arrogant where somebody's telling a story and you go, oh yeah, I just, what you just said is total BS.
A peer pressure, a very subtle peer pressure, because we tend to imitate things we see, and then now this peer pressure is more, I think it's changing constantly, and it's changing faster than it used to be, because the flow of information is just faster. For example, this okay boomer thing, this came out of nowhere. I saw it in a meme, then I saw it, somebody saying it, then I saw somebody talking about it on TV, and then you've seen it 3-4 times, and then you notice, okay, this is some sort of the new thing, saying okay boomer and being almost a little bit insulting towards them. And this will be gone maybe in 2 weeks, and then nobody talks about it anymore, then it's gone. So the collective thinking is also faster, I think. We forgot very fast. Public scandals Yeah. Let it be politics, let it be economics, let it be wherever, celebrities. It's when you ask people about a scandal last summer, 2017, 90% say, I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's constantly changing, and we're forgetting very, very fast because the flow, there's so much, our brain probably also starts filtering out so much that I wouldn't say we're necessarily smarter, we're just changing faster.
I'm going to dub
forgetting
that.
Faster.
Yeah. I think I'm going to dub that effect the churn. The churn being the fact that there's such a churn of information and new scandals and new stuff happening, new memes that we just... Everything that just happened, whether it was a day ago, it could have been a couple hours ago. It's just kind of vanishes.
Yeah, it vanishes like you don't even notice that it's gone, but it's suddenly gone. Suddenly you don't hear about it anymore. And then you suddenly see it maybe in 2-3 days on TV, 2019 in review.
Yes, yes, exactly. So I will say that the flip side of what I was talking about before, having the information at our fingertips. So we do need to take the generations, speaking as millennial here, I think we do need to take into account the criticisms of older generations being like, yeah, you're acting pretty arrogant and like you're sort of, you know, like you need to humble yourself a bit. But at the same time, we also need to recognize that fact checking, for example, is a good thing. And we grew up or older generations didn't grow up at a time where fact checking was readily available. And so they would have to, and if they did want to fact check that, what, they'd have to go to the microfiche at the public library. I don't even know if you know what that is, but it's like an old means. You'd take a newspaper or something. I don't even know exactly how it worked. And in this big catalog, this big library, you'd have to go find the cataloged information, bring it to this device, look at it. So, you know, we should basically be responsible and help, as part of the younger generations, help the older generations to effectively fact check and be able to determine what's signal and what's noise, so to speak. Because I've heard, and I don't know how true this is, but the spread of false information on Facebook in particular, on social media, is the worst among, like, I believe the baby boomer age cohort. But
that's,
you know,
what I was saying,
it's important.
I think what we're talking about when we talk about this change of availability of information is that I think as humans we are really masters of communication, and this is why we evolved and why we're here in the first place, kind of dominating the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because we evolved to communicate. Like, we can organize ourselves in millions and billions of people, and I think just the way we communicate to each other, now we just took the way we communicate from the physical world and we put it on another platform.
Yeah.
It just changed. It's for me, I personally think it's for the better, because I wouldn't, like, if I want to learn something, I have to go to the library and then search all the books and then, like, oh, maybe this. No, I prefer going to Google and then Googling
it
and then finding something on Google in a matter of seconds, because ultimately you have your life. I don't know if you're going to live 75, 76 years ago, or like, what's the 78 is the average here in the States, probably more, I don't know. You have a limited amount of time, and if you can do, in my personal opinion, time is super valuable. It's the only thing that you can control, and if you can do something if you can learn something with the same effectiveness in a small period of time, smaller period of time, you can learn more ultimately, and you can be more improved. So I think it's a good
efficiency
thing, because,
right? Because it's like constant efficiency.
Yeah, you're more efficient. You can do other things. You can learn more things in a smaller amount of time. So I think a person now in their lifetime could learn twice as much as a person could in the 20th century in their lifetime.
Yeah.
Just because it was not there. If you're living in the village, good luck.
Yes.
You're going to be a farmer. It's over. You know, like, maybe you're going to be the one son that goes to the city and then goes to the library and, I don't know, starts making a life and learns maybe about history.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, now we can learn about many things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's what you're saying is, adding on to what you're saying is, you need to humble yourself towards what's going on, what's come before you. And the fact that we are now, like, you know, twice as efficient at synthesizing information and accessing information is not because you're inherently better than the people that came before you. It's because you happen to grow up at a moment in history that has better resources.
So, yeah, I would say you have to humble yourself in terms of what we're talking about, like, oh yeah, this internet does have bad consequences, and there's some kind of...
Yeah.
Of course, there are going to be bad things associated with anything.
Yep.
But I would say humble yourself and then put yourself in the shoes of your grandfather.
Yep.
And what probably they would give to have their favorite books available quickly, yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And they may not understand it or tell you this because change. Again, why baby boomers are the ones that are getting the most fake ads on Facebook and everything is because probably me, you, and him in 50 years, when something new comes up, are not going to be so sophisticated.
Yeah, we're not going to.
No,
yeah.
Or like augmented reality or something. I don't think we're kind of scared of it, but I think the kids are like, I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. You well, know? It's such a lack of fear with the adoption curve with younger people. And I think that we project, everybody, I think, projects their own fears onto the younger generations where they say, oh, like we need to protect them from this. And it's like, no, they're probably fine with it.
Yeah.
Like they grew up with it being almost the norm. So they're probably used to it.
And I think you can contribute yourself. You can adopt a certain state of mind where you can do this better than the average. Because I personally have a grandfather from a relative of mine, very successful guy, 75 years old, and he was explaining to my father. My father was telling me, "Yeah, Facebook and stuff, it's so bad because kids are doing this."
Yeah.
He was like, "Listen, if you don't adopt, you're not going to participate.
Mm-hmm.
The world is going to move on, and you are not going to participate." And he was 75 years old. He's 81 now.
Mm-hmm.
He's still using Facebook. He gets everything.
Yeah.
Is now bread really from China or not?
Okay.
Like just picking a stupid example here. And now it's more like now we have fake news. Trump is impeached. And is he not impeached? Is he impeached? We can prove or disprove or we much faster because the information at the end of the day is readily available. So that's the only difference you have.
Yeah,
So I think the fake news has always been a thing, but it's it has remained equally dangerous and easy to prove or disprove.
Yeah.
All the time. And this has just accelerated.
Yes.
That's my general opinion on this.
That's a pretty good assessment of it. I think you're largely right with that. By the way, start looking through this PSA binder. We have about 6 minutes left. So so just
if
you find one that you like. So the last thing that I wanted to bring up related to the discussion that we've been talking about. And by the way, listeners, I appreciate that you've been sticking with us through some of this this denser stuff, but I think it's really important, really relevant right now. Pardon me. And I hope that you agree. But so the last point that I wanted to make is that so Greta Thunberg, you know who that is, right? The little girl from Sweden who I don't know if she's I don't know how old she is, maybe 14, something like that.
Yeah.
So you know, she's been very critical, and she wasn't the one that originated the OK Boomer meme, but she some of her criticisms have been obviously very heavily leveled against older generations for being reckless consumption, decadence, sort of living like there are no consequences to the consumption of fossil fuels or the consumption of you know, whatever other products they use. And so, like, I think that Greta Thunberg is directionally right in that we need to be more aware of our consumption patterns. Yet I think that this gets back to being humble, being generationally humble, and realizing that, like, we're no better than boomers or the other generations that consumed recklessly or who out of ignorance, like, threw trash out the window when they were done with it back in the 50s, right? Because right now, our consumption patterns are just different. What do we consume more than anything else, and probably recklessly? Data. This data doesn't just come out of nowhere. We need massive server farms, all of the energy consumed by our data. Do you think that the energy to keep your Netflix streaming so that you can also have and also have social media on your second device and on your third device, have you know, whatever other streaming services or shopping services or whatever, all of this on demand, do you think that's merely free, or is that just our generational fossil fuel? We're You know, I was just thinking about that earlier. I was saying, you know, we probably should humble ourselves a little bit.
Yeah, I think each generation has its own mistakes. So yeah. We're all like making maybe like the pendulum swings too far to the right a bit, and then a bit too far to the left, and then it's a bit too far to the middle, and then we are overemphasizing this sector, then we're overemphasizing this sector.
Yeah.
So I think maybe the next generation is doing the big mistake and they all stop eating bread, and then they notice, oops, we need bread for neurodevelopment or something like this. So this can always be a thing.
Bread, yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, well, that was actually a perfect transition because it looks like you chose something food-related for the PSA.
Yeah, from bread over to fruit. Looking for some sweet, great-tasting snacks that are also healthy for you? Try eating dried fruits. Dried figs, apples, cherries, bananas, apricots, peaches, pears, pineapples, raisins, cranberries, prunes, blueberries, mangoes, and also many other fruits are both tasty and good for you. Many dried fruits are an excellent natural source of cancer-fighting dietary fiber. Read the labels to understand which brands have added sugars, preservatives, and other ingredients. But no matter what, eating pretty much any kind of fruit is going to be better for you than candy or processed snacks. A public service message from all the fruits and nuts here at WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Awesome, Bill, like a pro. And I should point out, not written by you, but I actually think fairly well written. It was goofy. I enjoyed it. You don't have to read a second one. I was going to take the last 2 minutes because they're here and I don't want to go over. You know, pimp your show. I want you to be able to, where can we get?
To all the listeners, we are actually doing a podcast, the Financial Independent Podcast. You can find us at tfipodcast.com. You can find the Financial Independent Podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can find it on SoundCloud. We are soon going to come to Spotify, and mostly we focus on talking about finance, and we bring on guests who have their own startups, usually here from Boston. So if you want to learn about startups and the businesses coming around, you can tune in and listen to us. And yeah, that's it. Bill and Vlad, I guess. And thank you for having us here. And,
right on. Bill, did you have anything to add?
No, that was it. Was good.
Yeah. Great job, Vlad. And thank you both for coming on. I really appreciate it. And you're welcome back anytime. So for those people listening, if you called in because there were a couple calls earlier and I didn't get a chance to respond to the strobe quickly enough, I'll get to your calls next time. I guess I should say that you've been listening to Man vs. Mob Radio, and I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin. My guests tonight were, once again, Vlad and Bill, and you can catch their Financially Independent podcast. And I should... What did I say?
The
Financially Independent Podcast. And I should also quickly pimp my own podcast, which is Man v. Mob, which is on manvmobpodcast.com, as well as on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts. But be sure to follow me at Man v. Mob Podcast on Instagram. And in 2020, I'll be getting into Twitter and other stuff too. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and Merry Christmas. Turning this over to the next program now.